A lot of people get the idea that because you can buy it over the counter and there aren't these strong regulations against using these materials, which are poisons. I mean, pesticides, they wouldn't work killing bugs and different things if they weren't poisons, and they're poisons to people too, and they're poisons to the environment. These a lot needs to be done, and you know, we've started with this moratorium with the schools, but we need to move a lot further with it, you know, really put the message out strongly that these materials shouldn't be used, or there should be a very good reason to use them when they are used. There should be a permit process to use any sort of pesticide in the city of Santa Cruz, and a review process, and through that, the people in the city will have a say in what's being used around us. I mean, it's like other people have the right now to poison us with chemicals that, you know, we haven't had any say in. You know, they buy it over the counter, they spray it around, and a lot of times we don't even know. Caltrans is using pesticides in the city of Santa Cruz, even though the city has stated it doesn't want these materials used, and we really need to confront them on that issue as well. It's a very important issue, very much tied to this whole organic movement that's going on, we need organic cities. We don't need all these chemicals around us.
Peter?
I'm pretty unhappy with the level of different things that get dumped in our city and also in our agricultural areas around us. I surf, and whenever I go to 3 Mile After they spray out there, it smells funky in the water, and I wonder what that does to me. I manage 12 houses, and I don't use pesticides or anything like that on any of them. I think, you know, you can do this stuff manually. I live actually next door to Terra Nova Ken, and they show that it can be done in a much less destructive manner than just dumping pesticides out there. So I think we should really look at getting rid of that, the use of those, at least in public lands entirely. And I don't know how you can work on it in the private sector so much, but, at least for the city to sort of lead and say that they don't do that. If I get elected, another thing is related. I'd really like to see Santa Cruz ban the use of MTBE in local gasoline. The city of Tahoe took that up and banned it. It's something that's probably equally as bad, if not worse, than a lot of the pesticides, because you have no choice. You're breathing it every day. It's 10% of gasoline, and it's known to be cancer-causing. They even put it on your gas tank. When you go fill up your car next time, look, it says right there, you're pumping cancerous-causing stuff into your car and you're going to spew it out. You really have no choice in the matter, unfortunately. And it's something that may get phased out at some point by the state, depending on how the oil interests manage to maneuver. I think the city of Santa Cruz should, second the motion of Tahoe and say, you know what, we're not going to take this crap either. It usually blows inland, probably for us, so it really doesn't matter too much for us, but at least we can make a statement that, we're not going to stand for state and national governments foisting different things on us that are unhealthy for us. So I'd like to see those done away with, too.
All right. Well, we're way over time here. I just want to quickly ask all three of you if you have any points you want to end on. And Peter, why don't you just go ahead and start since you've got the mic there.
Hey, yeah, this has been really fun campaigning, and it's great meeting a lot of different people that I see every day but just haven't stopped to say hi to. And it's been really fun getting support from a lot of people. It's been very encouraging. I think it's been a little bit disillusioning to see sort of the inner workings of politics. I've been surprised by how organized different organizations are, really, you know, pushing their people and not having an open mind towards other people, particularly younger people, but just in general. So that's been a little disillusioning, but it is a really fun process for me, and I really can't wait to see how well I do Tuesday. I'm hoping I can do well, and I'm off to go canvas some more, but it's been great, and I've really enjoyed running with the other 14 people. They've all been very friendly, and whether we agree or disagree on stuff, it's been great getting to know those people, and sort of I felt like I was running with them as opposed to against them a lot of the time, which has been nice. And whether I agree with people or not on things, it's been a good experience, and I probably will be back running at some point. You know, this district elections might derail my chances of doing it anytime soon, but who knows? Maybe I'll move to a different district. And
all right, Peter Cook, thank you. Steve, you want to go ahead and close on any points?
Yeah, there's a lot of issues that just aren't being dealt with by the city government. City government here really has to, the politicians involved really have to pretend to be progressive on issues in order to get elected and to stay in office here. And unfortunately, though, they've been very anti-poor in terms of how police treat poor people, how they treat people of color, how they treat political activists fighting for the rights of homeless people. There's much that needs to be done, and in terms of a lot of these issues, it's to me, it's an ugly. There's a lot of ugliness involved. I see a lot of ugliness in people justifying things like keeping sleep illegal for people at night, and then pretending to be progressive on issues. So I think it's very important for people to look beyond a lot of the progressive sounding talk that you may hear from the Scott Kennedys of the world that get all kinds of money from all kinds of big money from corporations and so forth, and really look at what candidates are doing on the local level, what they're saying on the local level, and vote that way. And think about things in those terms, and take on this local system, which is not progressive, though it pretends to be, and vote for people who are really going to change things. Vote with your heart, and I think it's important that people get out and vote. There's very important things on the ballot. Proposition 36 will get rid of jail time for personal possession and drug use. And we've got candidates like Medea Benjamin, Craig Coffin, Ralph Nader running on the Green Party, taking on the system, taking on a lot of the problems that we're dealing with, and Steve Argue here running locally. So vote for me.
All right, thank you, Steve Argue. And Bonnie Moore, do you want to go ahead and close on any items there?
Yeah, it's called Vote Your Conscience. And right on, Steve. I just want to reiterate basically the same thing that I said before. This has been a definite learning experience. I really honor and treasure a lot of the people that I've met and what they've brought to this campaign and this candidacy here. And I wish everybody lots of luck. May the best people get in, and we'll just keep moving. If we don't get in, maybe we'll make it a council of 15. A whole tie vote there. Anyway, I just want to say that it's been a definite learning experience. There's been a lot of hard things and a lot of good things that have come by, and there is a lot of work that needs to be done. And please go out and vote. It's real important. Your vote will count. It'll make a difference here for the city of Santa Cruz towards the future. And so we need everybody to participate. Stand up. Get involved. Come to city council meetings. Get your views out there. And definitely sign up on commissions and task force, because we need to have task forces and commissions that reflect what they're designed for. And so I want to encourage everybody to step up and do what Steve's done, I've done, and come on down and run for a candidacy 2 years from now. Bye.
All right, that was Bonnie Moore. I want to thank all three of the candidates who joined me this morning, Steve Argue, Peter Cook, and Bonnie Moore. Real quick here, we have a phone call coming in. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, thank you very much for having me on. This is David Silva, the Green Party. Just wanted to let everybody know out there that we are doing door hangers for Ralph Nader, and on that door hanger we have the Green Team, the City Council, four City Council candidates we've endorsed, the Green Party's endorsed here, and we're distributing those from 103 Green Street. That's the Adobe on Green Street. If you don't know where Green Street is, it's sort of kind of across from Mission Plaza where Holy Cross is, but almost to Chestnut, but not quite. It's a one block long street. Just come on in, and we'll get you a precinct packet with a map and the designated houses to do the door hanging on. This is how we get out that doubtable vote that none of the pollsters are counting, and this is how we're going to make a big difference. And thanks for doing your show today. It was really great. I had to hear it in spots on in the car radio, but I really enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks, David.
Sure thing.
Bye-bye. Find a new hobby and don't doesn't cost a dime. It doesn't take much genius and it doesn't take much time. It's right up my North Valley, way off the Hindu path. Democracy in action, well, I call it Tuesday's wrath. Subvert the institution, the fortune and the fame. Send that carpet diners back and beat them at their game.
And the candidates, most of them are fleeing the studio, obviously afraid of the wrath of Norse, but we'll see. It's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the November 5th, 2000 edition, Election Eve. Who do you vote for? Hey, I'll give you all the answers. Still in the studio, as we argue, and hey, certainly unusual party is breaking in. We'll have to see what happens here. No, it's not an FCC raid. It's could be a party happening here. We'll see. Stay with us and join the party on 96.3. To make a television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe. Rosenberg's H-bomb, Sugar Ray, Panmunjom, Randall, the King and I, and the Catcher in the Rye, Eisenhower vaccine, England's got a new queen, Marciano, Liberace, Santa Anna, goodbye.
We didn't start the fire, it was always burning since the world's been turning.
Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Cohn, Juan Perón, Toscanini, Dacron, Gin Gin, Foo Falls, Rock Around the Clock, Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's got a winning team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Grace, Peyton Grace, Trouble in the Suez.
We didn't start the fire, it was always burning since the world's been turning.
Welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the November 5th edition, as I mentioned before. I'm your host, Bathrop Spear Robert, and it's, of course, election time coming up, but more important than that, we got some other stuff happening which, sort of above and beyond the election, I guess the questions I would have asked these candidates, and one of them is remaining in the studio, we can certainly talk to him, that's Steve Argue, is questions about what you're going to do if you lose. If you lose, what are you going to do? What are your plans in the next month to make sure the issues that you have been pushing on actually get addressed by the city council, or more important, by the community, since I don't think the city council is going to address any real issues in the next 2 months. Even if, well, I suppose if the four candidates who are in this room won, we might actually get those issues addressed. But I don't think they are going to win, all four of them, certainly not all four of them, and I think we'll be lucky if we get one of them. But whatever the situation, what's going to happen if that unlikely or likely alternative happens when the candidates don't win? And we're going to be talking to the candidates about that. We also have interview with San Jose activist Nancy Nichols, who actually lives in Felton, about the trial of this first of the three trials coming up of the 23 San Jose and Santa Cruz activists who sat in at City Council in San Jose last spring. The verdict: guilty for six of them, and trials will be coming up for another 10 or 15 of them soon. We're going to be also considering issues of LAPD police abuse. We're going to be looking into having a special interview with permission of Club Cruise of Anita Henry and Kate Wells, the soundtrack of a forthcoming Club Cruise show on medical marijuana. That should be a half hour, a long presentation, which I encourage you to stay tuned for. And if activist Scope It Out Scott Graham gets into the studio, he's a working man and can't always get down here, we're going to be examining in detail more of the Mercy Charities housing giveaway of last Tuesday when the City Council voted $1.5 million for Mercy Charities housing as essentially a flat grant. And on a four-day notice to the public, we got this special deal where Mercy Charities would take over the Dolphin Apartments property, take over the Rex Court property. Actually, it's the Dolphin they have, but presumably their project will eventually take over the Rex Court as well across the street on Liebrand Avenue, half a block from the boardwalk there down on the Beach Flats area. We're going to be talking about that and We're going to be talking about whatever else you want to talk about. The call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. It's also voicemail in case you want to catch the us off-air, 427-4523. If you want to catch me off-air and my show, that's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's a number also for the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And, of course, Post Office Box 7507 is the Post Office Box for Free Radio Santa Cruz. In case you want to write something in, send in a large check or a small check, perhaps a little hate mail, a few terrorist threats, hey, send them in to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. Webpage for Free Radio Santa Cruz here at 96.3 is www.microradio.net/FRSC. And the email address, similarly, is frsc@microradio.net or frsc@cruzio.com, whatever you prefer. You've forgotten any of these because I've been rattling through them so fast. Just remember one number, 423-HUFF, 423-H-U-F-F, 423-4833. I believe my producer will be at that number. And if not, I myself will respond to calls later and give you any information about any of those numbers or anything else you hear on this show or just civil rights around Santa Cruz for poor people generally. That's what HUFF is interested in. That's what we've been following for the last decade. Still in the studio with me is Steve Argue, in my mind, the best candidate for city council that we have, considering the issues that I think those listening to this station are concerned with, rent control, the rights of people in poverty, the rights of people who are struggling to maintain some kind of a minimum or living wage, the rights of people who are without houses, the rights of people who just want to walk downtown without getting harassed or by the police, who want to be able to use their public spaces because they may look homeless, and that, of course, becomes a disability in Santa Cruz. Steve, I'm glad you stayed with us.
Hello.
Hi. I guess because we're talking election stuff, I've got a flyer which I put out about a month and a half ago called End the Rotkin Kennedy Legacy. I'm going to hand it to you to kind of look over and give you a few minutes to read it. You've probably seen it before, but I want you to kind of familiarize yourself with it a little bit, give yourself a minute or two to read it, in which I raise certain issues. I'm sorry I didn't raise more of these issues more intensely in the campaign. The primary issue that I had and have is, though we have a series of so-called front-running candidates, Porter, Bugenthal, Riley, maybe Leff, maybe DeBrava, I'm talking about that group. There's also Kennedy and Premack, which are to the right of that group, though they're all pretty much to the right of you and I, Steve, and I think the issues that need to be addressed in Santa Cruz, we have these candidates who are kind of babbling away, but nobody is criticizing the current city council in terms of the meaningful issues other than yourself and possibly Jake Fathy and possibly Bonnie Moore, and I guess on an issue or two, Peter Cook also. But we didn't get a lot of clear questions being asked by the various organizations, Chamber of Commerce, SCAN, Downtown Neighbors, People's Democratic Club, Women's Democratic Club, and I guess the... not just the Chamber of Commerce, but the Convention Center also did a forum that you narrowly got to. And I remember you dashed into that one because they hadn't informed you of it, apparently. The issues that I have kind of got before you there, and also you might want to look at the other side, questions for candidates, were not addressed. I'm going to read some of these aloud to folks out there in the audience. And by the way, in the midst of all this, I would like people out there who are listening to this show to call in and tell me who you're going to vote for at the city council level or who you think others should vote for and why. Because we've gotten a lot of talk from the candidates and, you know, thank you very much, candidates. But I want to know what the public is thinking about all this situation. I mean, are you going to... who are you going to vote for? And if you... I'm not really terribly interested in the national races, frankly. I'm interested in the city council races locally. But, you know, feel free to weigh in on Gore, Bush, Buchanan, Nader, or, of course, the really key candidate, Robert Steffen, our own Robert Steffen running for president in a bag downtown. This hour flyer, and the number to call, by the way, is 427-3772. Give a call in to 427-3772. That's an open line right now, and we are listening and waiting for your calls. Looks like we've got another city council candidate who's breaking into the studio. Probably left something behind. No, maybe he's coming to join us. That's Martin Bryant. We do have Martin Bryant. And it looks like Martin Bryant. My apologies. Or, you know, a little mistaken identity. It really was good that Vinny did that last show, and I'm just sorry there wasn't more input from the public on that, on the issues. Anyway, the questions I had of the candidates were, I'm concerned about what I call the Rotkin-Kennedy legacy. That is to say, the legacy that the current city council is still continuing with. It's really the Sugar legacy now, the Sugar Fitzmaurice legacy. And the flyer reads like this: Mike Rotkin may be leaving, Scott Kennedy may be discredited and exposed, but our real challenge remains. End the Rotkin-Kennedy legacy. For example, Beesall-style, Beach South of Laurel, that is, closed-door decisions, that is to say, the kind of process they had 2 years ago to pass this beach flats, this beach area plan, which would expand the boardwalk, set up commercial development, and realign 3rd Street, which was cut back after massive protest, and we elected three candidates, supposedly, who were going to change that legacy, but did they? The Beesall-style closed-door decisions that let City Attorney Barisoni, City Manager Dick Wilson, Redevelopment Agency Head Seal Cirillo, staffers run the show without meaningful community input, real tenant involvement or negotiation, or adequate tenant protection for those affected. And we found Kennedy and Rotkin in 1998. They did a property giveaway, which is now being fought by the current city council, the riverfront property giveaway, and of course the Beesall plan itself, which the current city council majority opposed. But now you look at Fitzmaurice and Sugar in 2000, they're buying the Dolphin property, or rather they're giving the money to Mercy Charities to buy the Dolphin property with no guarantees. I'm going to ask for your reaction to this, Steve. Do we have the same process happening here? Has there been a significant change? Which of the candidates, other than yourself, are addressing it? Because I know you are addressing it. But among the other candidates, Steve argue, who else is, do you think, addressing this issue at all?
The beach flats, the what's going on with the Dolphin,
right,
and
as
Lee
well as
and,
the closed door decision style, and the fact that we seem to have a staff, whether it's the city attorney, the city manager, the head of the redevelopment agency, the head of the planning department, Eileen Fogarty, I guess, who's leaving, or the police chief, Steve Belcher, they're all engaging in a closed door process, and the current city council is doing the same thing, I think, making a lot of decisions behind closed doors. Which of the candidates that you look at have raised this issue most? And I ask you, because you've been on a lot of these forums and you've heard what the candidates have said, and all right. Beyond that, which of them do you believe?
Well, I don't have a lot of confidence in a lot of the other candidates, quite frankly. The ones that have been criticizing the city council in terms of this, what's been going on with the in the beach flats in terms of housing down there, are myself, Bonnie Moore, and Peter Cook, the same people who were just here just now.
Should we believe them?
Well, I'm not going to say should we or whether or not we should believe them or not. I just look at like a lot of where they're coming from in terms of like Bonnie Moore, I think, has a lot of good things to say when she's cornered, when she's really asked, you know, like, are you for rent control, point blank? She'll say she's for rent control, but she's not campaigning around the issue. She's, you know, and some of these other issues in terms of the beach flats and the police. She seems to be fairly good. You know, but then I look at kind of the other side of it, the fact that she is a registered Democrat. And when this issue came up in talking with her, she says to me, you know, that I'm registered Peace and Freedom Party, and I oppose the Democrats. I see the Democrats as a political party of war, racism, anti-poor, a lot of the problems we're living under. That's the ruling party, and. You know, the issue came up. She said, well, I was in the Peace and Freedom Party once, but I grew older and I grew wiser. And Steve, you'll grow older and you'll grow wiser someday too. To me, that makes me a little bit skeptical of where she's coming from. Peter Cook, you know, Peter Cook has a good position when it comes to Dolphin Lee.
What about the
closed door process? I don't hear a whole lot of people talking about. I haven't heard a lot of people raising that as an issue.
How about other candidates on the forums who haven't showed up at the Dolphin Forum that was televised last week ago Saturday, who didn't show up at the Fiesta, who haven't showed up here at Vinny's show, but who may have made statements that you think we should pay some attention to?
I think most of the candidates running are status quo candidates, the ones that you see the signs around all over the place, that have been able to raise more money than say my campaign, and have more of a presence in that sense. You've stated that who you thought were front runners. I'm not sure what you base that on, since I haven't seen any polls published, but there has been a strong grassroots support for my campaign, and I have been able to get the word out a lot through a lot of different media and stuff. Mm-hmm. But in terms of where a lot of these other candidates stand,
I'm looking for particular issues here, Steve. I'm trying to run through them because I'm trying to use your knowledge of these forums to do that. Now, I've asked you the question about, you know, the closed door decision thing. I know Ed Porter was very angry about. He emailed in a lot this summer on the Dolphin, and so did Scott Bugenthal. Uh-huh. But again, then we haven't heard from them since then. And I guess
I stated that.
But what about
that
the
they
forums?
Haven't been, that hasn't been raised by the candidates
right.
as
so
an issue in the forums.
Do you recall? So it hasn't been, has have there been any comments on the closed door process or on the Dolphin Lee situation at the forums from other candidates that you remember that you think we should know about?
Well, I've raised it, and Peter Cook has raised it in forums, but it hasn't been raised a whole lot as an issue by a lot of the candidates.
Another question is...
And a lot of the candidates, I think, are very much afraid of the issue. That's why they haven't gone down to the flats like me and Bonnie Moore and Peter Cook have.
Well, Arnie Leff went down to the flats to distribute a letter denouncing me personally and assuring the tenants that it was a complicated issue and that he would work on it.
Right. Right, and but he's certainly on the other side in terms of.
Well, he seems to be clumping a lot with Kennedy and Premack, which worries me. That's Arnie Leff, the Green Party endorsed, Peace and Freedom Party endorsed candidate. Which I should note, Leff was endorsed by Peace and Freedom after Peace and Freedom decided not to endorse him at its public central committee meeting. Then it met again in private and made a different decision, sort of similar to what the SCAN steering committee did when they shut down the housing committee, the SCAN housing committee, and sort of delegitimized the Dolphin Forum back in October without going to the general membership. In fact, in defiance of the general membership's May 31st decision, which said, let's give these Dolphin and Lee tenants real guarantees, City Council, and we elected you, pretty much. SCAN's been electing them for years, before we proceed further with this $12.5 million project. Let's make sure that they all have housing. Let's make sure we're not destroying housing they have. And, of course, City Council has ignored that resolution and not voted the explicit guarantees that SCAN repeatedly requested, that you and I have requested, that the tenants have requested. Now, the question, you know, we've kind of talked about that as far as the candidates goes. What about, here's another issue, the flyer says, remember who you voted for in 1998 and what happened? Mismanaging funds, unchecked cost overruns, and sole source preferences and suppliers. That is to say, the city doesn't do a bidding process, but simply assigns a project to a sole source builder or shelter provider, as, for example, was done with the Dolphin. They did no RFP, request for proposals. Kennedy and Rotkin in 1998 did this with the Pelton Street property. They essentially, in defiance of what people wanted to do, where the homeless garden was, they sold it off, and now, of course, they got the Pelton Street palaces, as I call them. They're these big fancy homes. And in the downtown ordinance debate, there was a situation where people were. I'm looking at another thing. It's not the downtown ordinances debate. In fact, let me see. The case of mismanaged funds and unchecked cost overruns, I think, has more to do with the police department and the fact that we have $7 million overrun with the police department. But again, the overrun continues. Even as recently as two council meetings ago, there was more money for the police departments, more money for parking lots. The parking lot that's being built or that was built and that there was extensive cost overruns on. Have any of the candidates raised these issues? And I ask you this not because, and we do have an election, but I'm also looking forward to you, Steve, argue as critic, either inside the council or outside the council, on terms of these issues? And you being able to say, hey, Ed Porter, you're on the council, and you raised these issues in the campaign. Why aren't you working on them? In other words, who's raised these issues in the forums? I'm looking for you as a sort of a source of information here.
Well, there's a lot of candidates who've raised... Who've raised a number of issues, but they no candidate talks about things like the police and police budgets, and except for myself in the forums, except for in kind of a fluffy sense of saying, well, we'll strengthen the Citizens Police Review Board without any concrete step on what they're going to do to strengthen the Citizens Police Review Board. It's the same thing we heard from Rotkin, from Sugar, from Crone, in the election 2 years ago. They were talking about strengthening the Citizens Police Review Board. They were talking about strengthening it after they got elected, and we really haven't seen that happen either.
No, contrary, actually.
So what we need more concrete types of things. I mean, politicians typically will go to voters during an election and talk about their concern about issues and talk about things in vague ways without talking about concrete things. And that's been a pretty typical thing on most issues in terms of how the candidates have dealt with a lot of the issues in the debates, and they sound pretty good to a lot of listeners. You know, oh wow, they all sound really progressive. You know, a lot of people have that type of attitude coming out of some of these discussions. But when it comes down to a lot of concrete things like ending the sleeping ban and talking about getting the police in check, there hasn't been a lot of concrete things said in a lot of the discussions. There have been a few, but...
Let's get concrete, then. I'm going to read the rest of this flyer, and I'm going to ask you to comment on it. Unchecked police department power. Kennedy and Rotkin in 98, they closed the riverbank. You can no longer walk along the riverbank without it being an infraction crime the first time, and a misdemeanor if you do it twice. No investigation of the Happy John Dine shooting, and this, of course, is coming up again on November 12th. We'll be having a protest and memorial downtown at the town clock and at the... place where Happy John Dine was shot to death by Officer Connor Carey, with no independent investigation following, and an immediate ratification of the police department's behavior, as we've seen again repeatedly in L.A., in New York, in Oakland, and other places where the scandal now is beginning to stink so badly that even the U.S. Commission, Justice Commission, I guess it's the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, I've got to get the exact report before me, but it was a report released yesterday or the day before which talked about this kind of violence in different places. Anyway, we have a situation where Kennedy and Rotkin in 98 had no problem with closing down the riverbank at the request of Chief Belcher. They had no investigation of the Happy John Dine shooting. And then in 2000, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar are ratifying closed investigations of the May 22nd, 1999 events, the protests that the police broke up about the Yugoslavian bombing, and that you served 7 months in jail for, Steve. And, of course, the rubber stamping of the police budget. Did Arnie Leff, as chair of the Citizens Police Review Board, investigate the police budget either in 1999 or in 2000, though he was requested to do so on both occasions by constituents? No. It never even made it to a committee. And for this man to be claiming he's a progressive and getting the support of the Peace and Freedom Party and getting the support of the Green Party is outrageous. I am shocked that people like David Silva have been taken in by this situation, a man so abused by the police department, to actually come out and be stumping for this guy. It's a tribute to the man's ability to fluff us along. But again, the issue I have here is what the candidates on the issue of unchecked police department power, how do they stand?
Okay. Now, in terms of that, I'm the only one really taking a stand on in terms of the police. I'm the only one who's been talking about concretely what it will take to strengthen the Citizens Police Review Board. Only one talking about the need to fire the chief of police. I just talked a bit about it on Vinny's show, some of the things that have happened, like in terms of Chief Belcher covering up for the police killing of Happy John Dine, coming out 3 hours after he was shot, saying that Happy John Dine was pointing a toy gun in a combat stance.
What needs to be done to change this is what I'm wondering, because I've covered that too.
Right. And I was building up for it. Yeah. He needs to be fired, because he's covers up for the police consistently. Mm-hmm. Some real changes need to be made in how the police departments run. And starting to do that would be getting rid of the man responsible for the police department.
Do you have any replacements that you would suggest for Chief Belcher?
There's a police officer, 30-year police officer over in East Palo Alto, who was recently fired for speaking out against brutality going on in the East Palo Alto police department. To me, he'd be a strong candidate for a chief of police. He's been speaking out on issues of police brutality in San Jose.
Have you spoken to him and asked him if he might accept such an appointment if you were on the city council and the city council wanted to offer it to him? Actually, I guess it would be the city manager that would have to do that, but if it were offered to him?
I haven't spoken to him on that. I mean, you asked. I mean, this is one person that's a possibility.
Sure.
The key question is looking for someone who isn't interested in covering up the kinds of abuses that have gone on and participating in the types of abuses that have gone on, like Belcher has.
Any other activists, not activists, any other city council candidates, and again, I'm asking you this not because it has anything to do with the election. It has to do with after the election. I'm really looking toward after the election, and perhaps I'm a little bit premature in that. But whether you're on the council or not, what, based on your looking at the record of the people in the forums, the city council candidate in forums, which council member, if he or she was elected, would you turn to and say, in the forum in last October, you said this about the police, now I want you to take some action on it? In other words, or alternately, we can't rely on you because you supported the police in this forum. Give us a sense of your reactions to how different council candidates have dealt with the police issue in the forum. And I try to be as specific as you can, because I know you've said before, nobody does it but me, pretty much, although there have been a few exceptions that haven't addressed it specifically. And I think you're right. But I'm trying to remember, I'm trying to use your memory for you to be able to challenge these people once on the council and say, you said on this date you would do this, I want you to do it now. In other words, I want you to help the community know this, because none of us have been to the forums as frequently as you have.
Right. Well, when it comes to the police, actually, I was saying some exceptions, but when it comes to the police, they've consistently not really said much in terms of what they will do. The ones that have said that they want to do anything about holding the police more accountable, all they've said is strengthening the CPRB, and they haven't been specific on what that means to strengthen the CPRB.
We're talking Arnie Leffier and Scott Bugenthal.
Right, right.
Are we talking Ed Porter?
Has Ed Porter said strengthen the CPRB? I can't really remember. But to me, strengthening the CPRB is, if you're going to strengthen the CPRB, you got to give it the ability to actually do something more than just give a recommendation to the chief of police. The CPRB has to have the ability to hire and fire the police in order to really have any authority. And it has to have people appointed on it that really want to do something. And when I don't hear them saying anything specific in terms of what they're saying to strengthen the CPRB,
right.
this has been something Christopher Crone and Keith Sugar have been saying for the past 2 years, that
right.
they want to strengthen the CPRB
right.
too.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of shut off, you know.
Right.
None of the candidates have gone beyond that except me. So
we're talking to Steve Argue on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. That's what you're tuned to. This is a call-in show in case you want to talk about any of the city council candidates or the issues you think should be addressed. Although I would remind you, this show particularly focuses on low-income folks, focuses on civil rights, and focuses on the situation of people in terms of the housing and homelessness crisis here in Santa Cruz. Number here is 427-3772, 427-3772.
In terms of Ed Porter stated that he wants more hosts put downtown as part of taking on the situation with drugs. That is one specific thing that Ed Porter has said. And I'm advocating the opposite. I'm advocating less enforcement, less focus in the direction of enforcement, and more in the direction of youth programs, more in the direction of drug treatment programs like that, less in terms of entrapment for and marijuana busts and busts on other issues or other drug busts, non or victimless crimes. So that there is one specific thing. Ed Porter has come up. You were asking about Ed Porter.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I asked a number of questions for candidates in this on the other side of this flyer. The questions I asked is, will you enforce the SCAN May 31st, 2000 resolution requiring a halt to the acquisition of the Dolphin until real guarantees are secured for tenants? Kind of a moot issue now because Dolphin has will go into... Well, escrow ends on the 15th, and Mercy Charities Housing has been handed the money by City Council in a special noon session that very few people, I imagine, knew about until it happened, even though it was posted, even though the Brown Act was met, although some say the Brown Act wasn't met because information was not out in Spanish, because the 40-page key document was not available to people to look at in the city clerk's office. In fact, was not available until the very time of the meeting. In fact, I'm pretty sure, I think it was available at the actual time of the meeting, but it's supposed to be available beforehand. Stop business giveaways, I asked, would the candidate stop business giveaways like CVC, the hosts, we already heard you talk about that, Steve, private business police, in essence, millions of dollars to parking subsidies to the Cooper House, a blank check to Au's proposed theater expansion, and the endless hands-off policy toward the Seaside Company. I don't know if anybody ever addressed that in the election. I asked them, the candidates, would they act not talk to secure real rent control, real renter protection, and a tax on speculation? I don't recall this issue ever came up. And some of this, you know, is our fault. It's my fault and your fault out there for not demanding these issues, for not coming in with pickets and people in numbers to these forums and saying, hold it, we know the little prefabricated format you want, but these are the questions we want answered and we need answered now. And I'm afraid that it's going to have to be the community that does that, Steve. And if you're off the council or if you're on the council, either way, what kind of activism do you see yourself doing in the next 2 months? What issues are you going to be focusing on most intensely that you think that the council has to address, whether you're on it or off it?
Many of the same issues that I've been raising. I think we can do a lot of organizing around the issue of rent control. It's a critical issue. Organizing around the sleeping ban, hopefully pushing a new city council, whoever's on it, in the direction of lifting the sleeping ban, on some key issues like this, and pushing for rent control. I see organizing around a multi-issued direction, and hopefully building up a strong Peace and Freedom Party with regular forums, taking on these issues, and really taking on. The elections and the next elections, hopefully getting a slate together that will take up all of these issues, take on the status quo, and have a number of candidates up there speaking out for rent control and on a lot of these other issues.
And for those who are interested in the sleeping ban, there will be a forum today from 2 to 5, and not really a forum, an organizational meeting at Loudoun Nelson for different strategies. I spoke with Jim Costner, who is organizing and has rented the space for the meeting to take place 2 to 5 today at Loudoun Nelson Center. It's going to be concerned with developing some strong protest in the next month and a half, which is, as many of us know, a key season for tourism and for, well, not tourism, actually the summer is tourism, but the business community makes most of its money between Thanksgiving and Christmas. It is a key time when businesses are most vulnerable to protest downtown around civil rights issues. And that is a subject that came up, I think, at the forum which Jim Costner threw last Thursday. And I guess you spoke there, Steve, and I spoke there. And I missed half of it because I was doing a radio show for part of it. This show also airs from 6 to 8 on Thursday. It's actually another show, another. We do another version. We are continually giving you new information out there. folks, and indeed I hope you can give us some new information. 427-3772 is the call-in number. But again, this afternoon, 2 to 5, invite you to come to Loudon Nelson Center if you want to be a part of a campaign to end the sleeping ban. And if you can't come, give a call to 423-HUFF, and if you want to leave your number, your email address, and you want to be reached and get more information about this, we can certainly do that. 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And, of course, number in the studios, if you want to join this live here on the air, is 427-3772. So, we had some interesting proposals at the last sleeping ban kind of get-together on Thursday, ranging from a proposal to, I guess the legal proposal, proposal of a lawsuit, which has been a kind of a favorite in past meetings, didn't come up, although I think it's still there on the back burner, to actually try to do what Portland and Austin have done, which is to have the sleeping ban declared essentially illegal or unconstitutional. I think in Austin it was illegal because it was too vague, and in Portland, Oregon, it was found unconstitutional as a violation of can't be punished for simply being homeless, and it was a way of punishing people for being homeless, and also violated their right to travel about the city. If you travel, you have to be able to sleep in some way, and if you're arrested for sleeping simply and no other behavior, that's a violation of that constitutional right. It's really the right to be, almost, rather than the right to travel. But anyway, there are legal, not precedents for us, because these are lower courts in different states, but there are precedents morally, and there is encouragement here. I mean, we know that in Florida, in the Miami-Pottinger decision, there was a federal decision, again, not at a level that is binding on our federal courts here, but the case has never really been taken clearly to federal court. There was a sort of a case brought on the Jensen decision, or was it the Joyce decision? It starts with a J, back in the early 90s in San Francisco, but that case never quite got resolved. It was a bad decision, but it all kind of got set aside because the Matrix program that Jordan, Mayor Jordan in San Francisco, was doing was sort of formally discontinued, although Willie Brown, of course, has actually continued the Matrix program up there, which is the sweep the homeless from the streets program, don't allow them to sleep and in public spaces. Food Not Bombs has been harassed less under Brown than under Jordan, but has suffered continued harassment of a sort. So the question that we have, again, I guess at this meeting today from 2 to 5, is what's the best answer in Santa Cruz? What kind of solutions can we coalesce around that people are willing to put time into? And I think that's really important because it's one thing to sit around and talk about something, and it's another to find a way to actually do the hard work of organizing that'll produce a result. And I kind of feel that we need people who want to really commit 10 hours a week. And we need 10 people like that even really before we begin serious work on this, if we're not going to be spinning our wheels. And I think that, who knows? You know, there's been a lot of educational work done. A lot of ground has been tilled in the last year and a half. I mean, the sleeping ban, Steve, has appeared on almost every forum. I mean, it kind of comes up either as a question in a questionnaire, or it comes up as a question from one of the official questions, whether the Chamber of Commerce or whatever. I mean, don't you see that as a sort of an impact of our protests and our educational efforts?
Oh yeah, definitely. Actually, there were a number of forums where it wasn't raised as a question, but I was able to raise it anyway by being a candidate. But yeah, it's definitely a result of a lot of hard work, years of hard work, protest, educating, and it is very much an issue that candidates have been forced to deal with. We have candidates dealing with it in the wrong way. We have Dick Dubrava running a series of ads in the Sentinel about why he's for the sleeping ban. And then others who've been forced politically to take a stand against the sleeping ban, candidates who've stated that they're against it, are myself, Ed Porter, Bonnie Moore, and Arnie Leff,
Jake Fathey,
mm-hmm. Bujenthal too, although he's
backed
he's
up back on immediate changes,
right? So
if you're going to vote for anybody and you insist on voting for four, pick four out of there, and I would say definitely put Steve in one of them. This is my personal preference. And again, it's just, you know, it's a hard, in a way, it's a hard call because other than Steve, it's hard to find people who, it's hard to know what people are going to do once they're elected because they're going to be subject to all kinds of pressures. Staff is going to be throwing one report on them after another. The business community, if the sleeping ban becomes an issue again on city council, as I hope it will mobilize and throw all kinds, the same slanders, the same smears, the same fears will all be thrown out at the folks, at the community, at all of us, and at the council. So will they be able to stand up to this? I don't know. I think obviously Cronin Sugar couldn't. We have an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I'm actually on Free Radio?
Yes, you are.
How's it going?
It's good. It's good. You want to be off Free Radio?
Oh, I don't care. How's it going?
Well, it's hanging in there, man. We appreciate your call. We're talking about the sleeping ban. I don't know if you've been following that discussion on the radio. Probably not.
I have. That sleeping ban has been there for a while, huh?
Well, you know how it is. They like to keep the poor people out of sight and out of trouble, really. As long as they don't show up publicly, then, well, there won't be no trouble. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've never slept on the streets of Santa Cruz. I'm actually calling long distance.
Oh, okay. Where are you calling from?
Eugene, Oregon.
Uh-oh. And are you? Have you got a report from Eugene? I know
no.
Eugene has its own... And you guys had your own struggle up there to establish vehicular sleeping places, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, about that fight so much. My dad is in an RV living on the streets right now in Eugene, so he's doing okay. Depends on what neighborhood you try and sleep in, I think.
Now, is it true that up in Eugene, this is what I was told, the police no longer investigate complaints of, quote, camping or sleeping? What they do instead is they send this sort of civilian, what is it, St. Vincent de Paul person to kind of go and look over the situation. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I don't. I could see that, and that's probably better in the long run than the police coming. There's definitely better things for police to do than disturb people's sleep, for sure. I do know that they have sections of Eugene that it's okay to park on the street and sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
There's one down by the river by this great park called Skinner's Butte Park.
Is that where your dad sleeps?
He's actually in the west part of Eugene.
How many people would you estimate are in vehicles in Eugene who sleep out there every night?
I would approximately say probably like 20 to 30, maybe.
Now, Eugene is a town of what, about 175,000, 80,000?
Uh-huh.
So that's...
twice the size of Santa Cruz.
So it's actually about 100,000, because Santa Cruz is 110,000.
Yeah, and it really fluctuates because of the university.
So that's not a lot of people. I would think that there are more, but, you know... You also have a kind of a nastier weather up there than we have down here.
Exactly. It's really getting cold at night right now. My dad's got long johns under his jeans when he sleeps.
Well, that kind of, they could sort of double as prison uniform in the event that he's arrested.
Oh, I hope he's never arrested. You know, he actually lived on the streets of Santa Cruz for like 6 years in his RV, but he worked swing shift so he could sleep during the day, and nobody bothered him if he was asleep during the day.
It's legal to sleep during the day in Santa Cruz.
Oh.
strangely enough, it's after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning that it becomes a $54 crime.
Oh.
That's the bizarre thing. We can't get the Sugar City Council, Sugar's name of the mayor, down here to do anything about it.
Does Neil Coonerty still own the bookstore?
Neil Coonerty, former mayor and the author of the downtown ordinances, the anti-homeless laws that make it illegal to ask for a dime after dark or
wow.
to set up a table in front of a street cafe or to sit down within 10 feet of a shop. Yes, he still owns the bookstore. And ironically, I said some good things about... some bad things about Borders, the multi-mega corporate bookstore that's moved into Santa Cruz. I don't think Coonerty should be driven out of business either by Borders. I don't think any bookseller should have to suffer that. And I think it's bad for the bookseller's market. Not that I have anything particularly good to say about Neil Coonerty, at least in terms of his...
Hold on a second.
Sure. Civil rights stuff. We're on the line with a caller from Eugene, Oregon. You're back.
Yeah.
You want to say something to the Free Radio audience out there, caller?
Oh, I definitely do. I miss all the different shows from Free Radio Santa Cruz. I was there when it first came into being and even had a show myself on there. So I'm just calling to support Free Radio, and I looked you guys up on the Internet. And this is Liza Bath for all those who might remember my crazy folk show.
There you go.
Bath time.
I probably was taking a bath at that time, so I don't. But you know, for those who do, is there? Do you want to leave a number where you can be reached, or should if you what you might do is you might well you can't call because it's too long distance calls, but I could take you off air and take your phone number and then pass it on to people if you'd like.
You could always email me. I'm at cable@efn.org, which is Eugene Freenet, efn.org.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have a website up soon. So.
Okay. Cable with a C, right?
Yep, like television. No relation.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Is there more you want to tell us before we zip on to the next segment of Bathrobes Piers Broadsides, which is the show you're coming into here?
No, I don't have much more to say, but thank you for letting me talk, and I encourage all those sleeping on the streets to keep sleeping on the streets.
Yeah, you gotta sleep somewhere, right?
Exactly.
Thanks
exactly.
A lot.
Those bushes along the river there are pretty cozy.
Right, that's, of course, two crimes, sleeping and being on the riverfront after dark. Another criminal bit of behavior. Thank our city council for that.
Yeah. Do you have a bathrobe on?
I wish I did. If you find a big, extra-large bathrobe, I want you to send it down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Extra-large, huh?
Extra-large. You're dealing with a big guy here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, best of luck to everybody.
Hey, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And who says people don't call into this show from far away? Hey, I'm really pleased to get the last caller, but, you know, you don't need to spend $1.50. You can just spend 35 cents or perhaps borrow a friend's phone and call in to 427-3772. That's the number here of Free Radio Santa Cruz. And join us in this conversation. This is a 2.5-hour show. We go till 1:30. And I want to thank Steve, are you taking off?
I was going to go to the bathroom.
We could examine that more closely, but perhaps we won't. Steve will be back after a brief pause. I myself will continue to throw stuff at you. As I said, I think the period following the election is going to be more important than the, you know, the actual election itself. I think that it's money is doing the talking, unfortunately, I think, in this election. And I wish I'd spent more time publicizing the bad record of a person like Scott Kennedy. And if anybody out there has anything good to say about Kennedy, please call in and let us talk about it right now, because generally speaking, Kennedy's record is horrible, and he is one of these powerful hack politicians that we just do not want back again. And insofar as even people associated with him, I think it's dangerous. Why do I say that? Is this some sort of personal smear of a man I have some personal problem with? No, this is the mayor who refused to investigate the beatings, police beatings, in May of 1994. This is the mayor who delayed the Citizens Police Review Board for two to three years, who derailed the Butchie Baker investigation in 1992 with assurances there would be police review shortly. And, of course, it hasn't really come at all ever, but they got their proposal together 2 years later in 1994. And they made sure that anything before the board got set up would not be investigated. And they made it that retroactive was not a possibility. This is the man, of course, who fronted for the Seaside Company along with Mike Rotkin in 1998. And hopefully people remember that. The man who sold out the Pelton Street property and the Homeless Garden Project. The man who maintained two faces on the sleeping ban, coming to demonstrations and saying he was against the entire camping ordinance, but at City Council doing absolutely nothing to make any changes on the issue, and now saying that he favors the sleeping ban as it exists. This is a guy who's a practical Democratic Party politician who, like so many others, like Marty Wormhout, like John Laird, like former mayors who refuse to address civil rights issues in terms of poor people locally, are more concerned with a ladder to power. And I would put Arnie Leff in this bag, too. Arnie Leff is the head of the Citizens Police Review Board, which I guess, let's see, it's... Today is the... No, it'll be a week from tomorrow that the next Citizens Police Review Board meeting will happen at 5:30. But Leff has been... he's been running on his record as a great liberal and a progressive and his work with medical marijuana. But as you're going to find out... Well, perhaps you already know, because if you want to believe me, or if you don't, you can always give Leff headquarters a call and ask him to confirm or deny it. he promised to speak out on this incredible city policy of refusing to give to declare an emergency, a medical emergency, and so that Kate Wells's Cannabis Pharmaceuticals, the largest medical marijuana distributor in Santa Cruz, has a place to legally operate. They're not asking the city to pay for it. They're just asking the city to allow them to do it. They've moved, because of bigotry in one neighborhood, to another neighborhood, one of the small industrial zones where it's been actually allowed. And Leff promised me personally, when I spoke to him at a Bonnie Moore rally at the house of Thomas Levitt, who threw such a thing 2 weeks ago, that he would go to city council and speak on the issue on October 24th if nothing had been done, if there weren't a medical marijuana thing either on the agenda or declared. And he didn't. Not a word from him. And I've seen him do several things in the last few weeks which have persuaded me that he is not only weak-kneed as a police review board person, but he's also likely to, well, he engages in personal smear tactics against me rather than deal with issues, which I suppose is nothing new. As I've mentioned on this show before, rather than deal with the Dolphin Lee issue of how do we give people guarantees that they won't lose their housing without having something to come back to, he had no answers for this. Not only that, he wouldn't take any questions. He didn't show up at the Fiesta. He didn't show up at the Forum. He hasn't shown up today at Vinny's show. He does not show up. His only answer when these issues are raised is, it's a complex issue and Robert Norris is a bad guy. Don't trust him. That's no issue. I mean, that's no answer to these questions as their rights are being sold down the river, the rights of tenants are being sold down the river. And I think we need to continue to persistently return to the question at hand. What about the people tonight, 1,000 to 2,000 strong, who will be sleeping out of doors? Why do they have to pay a $54 ticket, remain in fear of a police roust, or hide out so that they have to be worried about troll busters because they can't use the police to make complaints or to sleep in well-lighted areas? Are we going to have to wait until next year for Scott Bugenthal to get the balls to stand up on this issue and do what he promised and committed himself to do 2 months ago at the Homeless Working Group, which is to pass or at least introduce a resolution at City Council so that there will be an end to the sleeping ban before Christmas? If he can find safe sleeping zones, that's fine. But if he can't find those zones, then you have to eliminate the sleeping ban, period. And then when people start sleeping in different places and the residents don't like it, you bet your butt there'll be sleeping ban zones quickly initiated by the City Council. That's the way to get them. You don't say, hold your breath, don't sleep for the next year and a half while we debate these issues yet again, and then find, oh dear, as Catherine Byers put it, there's no place for them. Her classic comment in February 1999, after she had led the committee to examine the task force, a merry chase, a merry-go-round through the labyrinth of her own devising for 3 months, and then said, there's just no place for them. The same thing, of course, that Sugar, Fitzmaurice, and Crone, in essence, assented to this last summer when Byers turned tail on them, played Benedict Arnold and said, we don't want these safe sleeping zones because there are so many problems, but there was no documentation presented about the problems. Did Crone, did Sugar, did Fitzmaurice ask for the documentation? They did not. Just as they didn't ask for the documentation that would require, that we need to see before we demolish the Rex Court housing that's right across the street from the Dolphin property, or the documentation that there are the specific guarantees that they keep talking about when they're going to turn the Dolphin over to Mercy Charities Housing, or the documentation that the term legal occupant in the Dolphin apartments actually means everybody there and not just the person on the lease. So we have a situation where we have a complete ducking of real issues by the City Council in some very important areas. Any comments on any of this, Steve? I know you're eating all the popcorn over there.
Very good popcorn. Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't know. You said it very well, actually. The issues you were covering, I think it's points a lot in the direction also of being very careful about who we support in the elections themselves, and being sure to put forward movement members in the elections, people who we can hold accountable ourselves as movement members coming out of our own organizing, people who aren't all of a sudden our friends when the elections come around, and then turn tail once they're elected or refuse to expend their political currency, as Crone loves to say, and really making an issue, using that position to push the issues, to embarrass the other city council members when the other city council members refuse to recognize human rights, and to really put the pressure on them, and that being part of either forcing other city council members to vote the right way or get them off the council when they come up for re-election. And you really need that kind of activist approach on a city government body if you really want to make some changes. You can't have this idea Crone keeps raising of, oh, when the people lead, the leaders will follow. Well, that's not leadership. We need leadership. We need people who are willing to go in there and fight for some real changes.
But since we don't have it, we're going to have to do it ourselves, I'm afraid. And I mean, you...
And yeah, so and but part of it is also not accepting the politicians who speak that way and who really won't fight.
And Crone will, in fact, be on the council for the next 2 years, and he has in the past held Monday afternoon sessions at the Paragolisi at 5:30 on the evenings before the Tuesday City Council meeting, which is usually the second and fourth Tuesdays of every month. So if you want to show up and present to Christopher Crone your concerns, and hopefully do so in some numbers, the Paragolisi, the Cafe Paragolisi, is the place to come. Check your yellow pages or white pages for the exact location or address, the Paragolisi. It's about a block from Pacific Avenue. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norris. In the studio with me is City Council candidate Steve Argue. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to now be listening to a brief interview with Nancy Nichols. I actually mentioned this about an hour ago, in case you weren't there for the announcement. Nancy Nichols is an activist with the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry in San Jose, and she was convicted 2 days ago of disrupting a city council meeting. And she is one of 23 people arrested for this. She is one of six convicted in the first of three sets of mass trials. I myself will be going to trial in about 2 weeks on the same issue, and you're going to hear a discussion of it now. Well, we're on the line with activist Nancy Nichols. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
And Nancy, I just read off the internet, or perhaps it was off the San Jose Mercury News, that a number of activists from San Jose, and I guess perhaps from other places, concerned about housing issues and the rights of the homeless, were convicted in a jury trial. You want to give us some details on that?
Yes, we started the trial this Monday, and there were six of us starting out the trial. There's actually about 20 who were arrested that night in February. And after a week of deliberation, the jury found us guilty.
Now, reading in the Street Spirit article from about 6 months ago, as I understand it, this was the second action of a poor people's campaign organized by Reverend Scott Wagers. 23 were arrested as they stood before the public microphone awaiting a reply to their demands for housing from Mayor Ron Gonzalez.
Uh-huh. We actually had our time in front of the microphone, and Ron Gonzalez asked us to sit down, and we just explained that we weren't going to sit down until we got some answers and perhaps a meeting and some kind of a guarantee that he wouldn't just ignore the problem. And rather than waiting or giving any time or anything, he just called in San Jose PD and had us all arrested. It was a very short time between when he said, could you sit down, and came the cop. So we feel that he was pretty well prepared to have us arrested.
Now, how long did the jury selection process take? Were you there through the entire trial?
Yes. The jury selection process took a day and a half, like 9 to 4 the first day, and by about noon the next day, the jury was selected.
And was there, in some cases, you know, we hear the term jury nullification come up, which means, of course, that one juror, or maybe several jurors, decide that based on their conscience as to the justice or injustice of the general situation, whether it's the
unfair prosecution or an unconstitutional law, that regardless of the technical guilt or innocence of an individual, they will independently decide this is not an appropriate guilty verdict, even if the technical conditions for guilt, beyond a reasonable doubt, performing a certain act are met.
Right.
Were you, or were your lawyer, was your lawyer, I guess Dan Mayfield was your lawyer?
We had Dan Mayfield, and then we had six certified Santa Clara Law students, and instructor, and two other lawyers.
You had four lawyers?
We each had our own lawyers, so we had six, but then we also had the attorney who was overseeing the Santa Clara Law students.
Wow, so it was quite a...
Yeah, we each had our... There were six tables set up. We each sat with our lawyer. It was very formal.
Must have cost them a fortune.
Certainly a waste of money, wasn't it?
It sounds like at least $100,000, if you consider...
I really don't know.
Wow, I mean...
But, I mean, it was certainly a lot of time.
So, did this issue of jury nullification come up? Was the jury appealed to not... I mean, well, first of all, let me ask you, what were the charges?
The charges were a very... detailed that what our attorneys were arguing was that we did not substantially disrupt the city council meeting.
So the charge was disrupting a city council meeting?
Yes.
Which is a misdemeanor punishable by 6 months in jail and $1,000 fine?
Right. And there's a penal code, I don't remember the number of it, and the deputy district attorney said that we definitely substantially disrupted the city council meeting and that Mayor Gonzalez was forced to have us arrested. And there was really no evidence that showed that. We had a city council person come and say she doesn't even remember a disruption. What she remembers was being escorted back to the little room where they all went during the recess and then coming back out 15 minutes later and starting the meeting again. She barely remembered the disruption. So we had a really hard time understanding that it was so disruptive that we needed to be arrested. And my attorney pointed out that at many city council meetings, people stand up, shout, clap, do whatever, and that that's not at all unusual, but that to have the cops come in and arrest people for standing there peacefully is very unusual. So even on the detailed charges, I really think they didn't have enough evidence. They brought in two San Jose policemen who basically said, yeah, we came and arrested them, and they refused to sit down. Well, we all knew that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really a very sad commentary on the ways of the world, I think.
Well, now, was disrupting the city council the only charge?
Yes.
So each of you were...
Actually, disrupting was what we were charged with. You know, enough disruption that they had to arrest us. And you and I both know, Robert, there have been meetings that have been way more raucous than the one that we were at. There was no need to arrest us, and that's what our attorneys were.
Do you recall if... I was actually arrested with you, so I was a part of this group. I guess it was a fairly large group, and I guess I'll be going to trial in a couple of weeks.
You will. You know how this goes. Our attorneys are going to appeal.
Right, although they'll probably, yeah, the appeal I think may take several months, if not years, and so we may be facing, I may be facing a trial shortly in San Jose. But the question I have is, I don't recall that we, the group of people who were asking the mayor and the city council respond to our concerns, prevented other people from going to the mic, or prevented the mayor from continuing, or chanted in such a fashion as to make the continuation of the meeting impossible. As I remember, the mayor just decided he would recess the meeting instead of, let's say, working around us.
You're absolutely right. And that was what our attorneys argued. And they had diagrams showing how people could have approached the podium. And they pointed out that the reason people did not approach the podium is because the meeting was recessed, not because we were in the way. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is, regardless of the higher cause and you know, the kind of jury that you're talking about, I didn't see enough evidence personally to charge us with what we were charged with. So I was very surprised when the jury came back.
So what would the jury consist of? Were there women? Were there people of color? What was your feeling about the jury?
Let's see. There were definitely men and women, I think about equal. Yes, there were people of color. Yes, there were Latinos. You know, it was fairly balanced. I think it was fairly balanced.
How about in terms of class? Did you have any poor people on the jury?
Yes.
And did your attorneys talk to the jury afterward to determine what persuaded them?
Yes, and I was not there that day. You might want to call Scott or one of the other. I was unfortunately not there the very last day, and there was some interesting dialogue between the jurors and the defendants.
And any secondhand stuff you heard?
Apparently, one of the biggest complaints of the jurors was that they had to miss work and waste their time, and they were not particularly happy with it.
They were resentful with you and the attorneys.
Yes. They were resentful with the fact that we had caused them to, you know, come and sit on this trial. In other words, it didn't seem like they had thought very, very much about the deeper issue. And
Well, also, it was not you that forced them to come to the trial. It was the prosecution and, you know, the city that decided to try.
Oh, but it was, I know, but you know what I'm saying. That was just kind of, I guess, what a few of the jurors mentioned, and I'm not really sure what else they said, but it didn't seem to be too much.
Who were the individuals who were...
First Amendment rights, or for the fact that we were all, our intents were all motivated by trying to help people, and that several of the people on trial are homeless, and it was a very valid issue to come and talk to the mayor about it.
Now, let's go back to what the issue was. As I got it here, and as I remember it, they demanded that Gonzalez commit himself to immediate action to address the shortage of affordable housing.
We requested that. We really did request it. It was not. I mean, they had a transcript of the dialogue between Reverend Wagers and the mayor, and it was very, very cordial and very much. You know, there was nothing saying you have to this. You have right. to. Scott was just pleading.
He also said he was seeking...
It's important to recognize it.
The word demand, then, is not one you'd agree with, but request.
Request. We just said, we need to talk about this. It's time to talk about it, et cetera, et cetera.
And he said, I guess he also said, according to the story I'm looking from to refresh my memory, critical lack of shelter space and services for the 20,000 homeless people on the streets in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And he offered us a downstairs meeting with an aide and motel vouchers for the night, as I remember.
Right.
Was that brought out at the trial? Or?
Probably. There was, a Band-Aid approach. No, once again, Vivian Hart will take care of it. Well,
he had previously refused to meet with the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, which was the group that had sponsored this protest, right?
Right, and they had sent him letters and a lot of phone calls, and he refused to meet. And don't forget that the outcome of our arrest was forming the mayor's task force, which Scott and several of us were on that task force for about 6 months following this disruption. So it did lead to... a meeting, which is what we're asking for, so it's a shame that he had to arrest us and then decide he would meet with us.
Did you get, now, can you tell us a little bit about, I know we're talking about the trial, but what about the task force? Did that lead anywhere, or was it a case of talk, talk, do nothing?
Unfortunately, there was a lot of talk, and there were shelter providers, community activists, let's see, housing department representatives there, and eventually the meeting divided into two separate groups, one that were concerned about affordable, very low-income housing, which is us, and then the other half that were very concerned about the immediate shelter and continuing the whole process of sheltering, of course, the shelter providers. So the meeting broke down, basically, and as far as I understand, the half that we were involved in, which was asking for long-term changes and affordable housing, has never convened again. Mm-hmm. I believe the other half of the meeting has probably reconvened, and they're getting lots of money for their shelters. That's what I think happened with the mayor's task force. It was not particularly...
productive?
No, right.
What about the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry? Have you engaged, or has the ministry engaged in any further public protests in the last few months?
Yes, we are. We have a campaign going now against Cisco Systems, which is going to expand their... buildings into Coyote Valley. And, of course, we went to both of the city council meetings, planning meeting and the city council meeting, and it was voted in, you know, over the protest with the environmentalists and the housing activists, et cetera. So we have some work cut out for us to see if we can prevent Cisco from doing that development without putting some money into some kind of a housing trust fund or somehow allaying the, continuing housing crisis that they will add to. So we do have that campaign going, and First Christian Church is going to open again in a couple of weeks to house homeless women and children.
And that was an issue because the city was pressuring First Christian not to do that. You had a big fight a couple of years ago in which the city threatened to close down the church if they housed people during the winter.
Right, and I don't know if they will threaten to close it down again, but it's definitely going to happen. They're just putting in some showers now and waiting. As soon as that's done, I would say a couple of weeks, they will open it. And, I mean, you know, Robert, they're doing it because otherwise these people are going to be sleeping outside or in cars, and it's too ridiculous. Sorry, I'm just really getting mad because it's
Well, you, as
obvious,
you should.
It's also obvious that a church should be able to do what they need to do in good conscience. And I believe there was a law that was just passed, you might know better than I do, that that you cannot tell a church not to do that. So I think they're hoping that that will prevent them from being... from code enforcement coming down and closing it up again.
We've been talking with Nancy Nichols of the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry. This has been a very brief kind of overview of your trial where you and five others were convicted of disrupting a public assembly for an incident back in the spring at City Council in San Jose, where you were simply trying to get the mayor to respond to issues which he refused to even meet with you on prior to that so-called disruption. or interchange that you had with the mayor, and I guess there are two more trials coming up. Do you know the scheduled dates of those trials?
No, I don't.
Well, I'm going to be hopefully following that on Free Radio, and I'll also be calling you, Nancy, for a more extensive interview.
Okay.
So we can actually do this upright, maybe even get someone who's there for the last day to see what the jurors actually said, what convinced them.
Right, okay.
And I want to invite you, because I know you're going over to the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, which meets every Sunday at noon at the
First Christian Church, 80 South 5th Street.
In San Jose. And the number to call for more information is
345-2353, area code 408.
Okay, or can people call you locally if they need any more information?
No, they should call that other number.
Okay, or you can call 423-HUFF if you don't want to do a long-distance call to San Jose, and I'll try to get you what information you need. I encourage you today, Nancy, to tell the ministry that we are looking for people to come next week to the Happy John Dine Memorial, the man who was shot dead by Santa Cruz police 3 years ago with no independent investigation, and all non-police witnesses disputing the police story as to what happened. That'll be next Sunday, probably at dusk.
Okay.
If you guys could send just one or two representatives to speak and to talk about your trials, maybe we can do some joint action here.
Right. Okay. Sunday at dusk where?
Sunday at dusk at the town clock.
Okay.
And you give a call to 423-HUFF to get more information and let me know who's coming, if somebody's coming, or just to say we can't do it.
Okay.
Hey, Nancy Nichols, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Well, we're on the line with David Silva, Mr. Nader, here in Santa Cruz. You called up Ralph and told him to put out his much-belated statement against the sleeping ban. I still haven't seen that yet, David.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry that you didn't get...
Maybe you could quote from it in case you have it there.
Right now, I'm drowning in precinct lists. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is we're targeting all the declined estates, all the Greens, all the Reform, all the Independents, and we're pulling out that swayable vote in precincts all over the city of Santa Cruz. I still have some precinct packets left, so if any of your audience feel like walking some precincts for Nader and the Green Team, those are the city council candidates that we endorsed. And
that's
Medina.
Bugenthal. Who else?
That is Bonnie Moore, Arnie Leff, Scott Bugenthal, and Ed Porter.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Green Team. Plus also, we have a great senatorial candidate, Medea Benjamin, who people need to be reminded to vote for. So we have the precinct targeting so that we'll be pulling out this swayable vote, and we have the precinct packets here. We've got a lot of people out there walking. We've done most of the east side, but we got a few. We haven't done Democrats in the east side. We're considering doing that.
If I can strike out Arnie Leff's name, I'll be happy to go around and do that, perhaps.
Surely, no problem.
Okay, so you don't mind individuals taking their own approach to this?
No, I don't. No, everybody could carry whichever literature they want.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really great.
The most important thing is to get out the vote.
How can people reach you if they want to help you out on this?
Well, what they need to do is they need to come to 103 Green Street.
Mm-hmm. Arnie Leff's house.
It's called the Adobe on Green Street.
Right.
It's his bed and breakfast, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Green Street is right off of Mission Street. If you're coming from the east side, it's right after you pass Holy Cross before you get to Chestnut. If you're coming from the west side, it's just past Chestnut.
It's a very steep street.
It's very steep. It's very one block long street, very small. Just drive up the driveway. We have a little parking lot in the back behind the house that you can park in while you're picking up your packet, and we'll give you the literature you need.
Will there be medical marijuana available?
Actually, there's a lot of food and juices and coffee and so forth available, so we can get you energized and get you on your way.
If Arnie tries to evict me, will you defend me, David?
Evict you?
Yes.
Of course, yes, I'll defend you.
Excellent.
I never believe in you being excluded from any meeting. You know, I fought for you for a long time on that.
Well, I know you've been trying to mediate on the scan front. Any help with getting me back into...
I have not got a response on any of that.
Oh, dear.
Not a single response. As a matter of fact, there's newer issues arise every day on that of the same ilk.
Now, nope. In fact, just to let the audience know what happened here,
I have a volunteer here now.
You've got to get
so
to your volunteers.
I do believe getting to volunteers, yeah.
Well,
so
listen.
Tell people to come on down. And
you might invite your volunteers, if they're in the Loudoun Nelson area, to wander through the sleeping band meeting from 2 to 5 today. They might want to stop in.
Thanks for reminding me. I forgot to mention that.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to mention that to every walker today. And we do have a big flux of people coming at 1:30. So I'll mention it to them.
And we missed you yesterday with your automobile there, David, in the famous Green Party pro-Nader. Actually, I guess not a Green Party.
It was not a Green Party.
But it was a pro-Nader.
There's a lot of people that are pro-Nader, but we actually officially did not endorse that at all.
Well, we should talk about that because I was concerned about that. Maybe when you have more time.
We were very concerned about the image that the parade was beginning to shape up, and we were very concerned whether there might be some sabotage afoot, so we did not endorse it.
But we did have a lot of positive response. I want to report
that.
Oh,
good. That's good. You know, I think it's because of our action that they cleaned up their act. But they were really, really going down the wrong path there for a while.
Rather than take you away from your volunteers, I'll let you go. But I must say that it sounded like a stodgy Green Party leadership was stopping a fun parade or not supporting it. And I will have words to say about you
later.
Well,
it was just quite the opposite. I would say a pretty alert Green Party leadership stopped a disaster from happening. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Always ready for controversy. That's David Silva, hardworking activist around the sleeving ban. Unfortunately, also a supporter of a number of candidates that I regard as unfortunate. And the Green Party, I think, has made some mistakes in that regard. But, hey, we all make mistakes. And I think it's important what we do after the election, perhaps even more important that we're doing on these 2 days here before the election, because the changes are going to happen because you and I are out there doing something, not because we're waiting for Arnie Leff or even Ed Porter or even Steve Argue to do something. We have to do it ourselves. Phone number to call in is 427-3772. 427-3772. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And our lines are open. So if you're walking the Green Party beat for Nader and the Green Party candidates, minus Arnie Leff at least, on this issue, I would encourage you to carry a portable radio with you and listen in, and then, hey, borrow a phone from the house you're knocking on and spread the word about Free Radio Santa Cruz as you go, because I think this is really one of the few educational stations we have in Santa Cruz, one of the few places that David Silva or others could call in and say, this is what's happening, come on down, help us out, here's the news. This doesn't happen on commercial radio. It doesn't happen on so-called public radio. There's a whole elaborate bureaucratic structure you have to thread your way through. And while it is true that, I suppose in its own way, our little station has its bureaucracy in some sense, I think it is more accessible than your average station, and I hope it remains that way and becomes more so. That's a tweak to the collective to lift the ban on a few members I'd like to see back on the air again. Incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, what's going on there, pal?
Oh, speaking of band members, how you doing there, Merlin?
Oh, pretty good. Sunday listening to your show, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Happy it's not all Dolphin Lee. Nothing against Dolphin Lee people. Though.
Right, well, we were only hitting occasionally on the Dolphin Lee, though since you brought it up, I will say that there is a meeting, I hope tomorrow, of Residentes Unidos, for those who are interested. And if you want to confirm that, give a call to 423-HUFF, and you'll hear the little program notice. But, Merlin, what have you got to tell us?
If you guys ever change location, I'd be happy to come back on the radio.
Mm-hmm. Well,
there'd be a possibility of that happening.
You have to thread your way through the bureaucracy, and I understand you also were engaged in certain questionable alcoholic activities, Merlin.
Oh, yeah, we know those staunch Republican people working for, 96.3. I may not like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am...
They're nitpicking.
Yes.
Hypocritical nitpicking.
Well, what do you have on that? I know at Capitola you have been our source for the rent control controversy. Can you tell us something about the upcoming Capitola election?
Gail Ortiz is running. She's got a lot of fines out there. You know, she's for rent control.
Who is this? Her name again is?
Gail Ortiz.
Gail Ortiz. So you recommend a vote for Gail Ortiz in Capitola?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And in Santa Cruz, of course, Steve Argue.
And Steve Argue. Who do you favor in the district attorney's race?
Ruiz.
Mm-hmm. And how about for president?
Well, I think the best man for that would be Nader, but I'm probably going to vote for Gore because I sure as hell don't want Bush, and I got to say that I might be relying on my Social Security, and if Bush gets elected, kiss that goodbye.
Hmm.
I mean, there's just too much shit that Bush wants to do. I mean, it's like almost a vote for, what do they say, a vote for Nader is a vote for Bush? I think a vote for Bush is a vote for the Antichrist.
Well, I don't think a vote for Nader is a vote for Bush. I disagree with you, but I know a lot of...
I disagree with that, too. I think a vote for Nader is a vote for Nader, and he needs to be in the next election.
Right, and I think the thing for people to do who aren't concerned as you are that, you know, they may be influencing things in a tight state is look at the polls on the morning of the vote and then listen to who's winning nationally, and then you can make your choice as to whether you want to
go with
Mr.
Corcoran. Yeah, I know a lot of people, they're going to vote for Nader, but they're going to think if it's like a head-on, very close race between Bush and Gore. They're not going to vote for Nader. They're going to vote for Gore.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was a wide margin, that a lot of people, more people would vote for Nader. That's what I hear, you know.
I think you hear it right.
Yeah, on December 2nd, my pilot show, the Idle Hands pilot show on Community TV, the first band's going to be Worm. Probably going to have Steve arguing here whether or not he wins or loses, and you're welcome to come on down, so David Silva. Hopefully it'll be an entertaining two-hour live rock and roll band show, you know?
Dig it.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds good to me.
Well, see, there are other places in the community to go if you do get kicked off of pirate radio for one reason.
Well, I really want to see some more radio stations getting together. I don't understand why the university students don't start their own collective radio station, or why the Klan doesn't start its station, or why there isn't a Spanish language. I mean, you know, it's not, what is it? It costs $1,000, maybe $500 to $1,000.
Yeah, most $2,000, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, get a collective of 30 people, what is that per person? You know, that's what?
Yeah, and there's 30 different organizations that want to have their own radio station.
Well, then, you know, then have 5 or 10 of them, you know, get together and they can do it.
Yeah.
It's just very strange. I guess people are also afraid of the illegal status of it.
Oh, yeah, you know, the FCC always come by 96.3 and you tell them get the fuck out and they leave.
Right.
For about 6 years now, there's 96.3 still going strong.
It's true.
I don't see anybody who's gone to jail. I don't know anybody in Pirate Radio that's gone to jail for doing it.
Not, and certainly in California, as far as I know.
Well, that might change if Bush gets elected.
I think the FCC continues to be appointed by the same people, but I suppose it's theoretically possible. Well, Merlin, I'm going to actually, inspired by your suggestion, I'm going to play a few ads for the Bush and Gore, billionaires for Bush and Gore, and then we're going to probably turn to the medical marijuana preview. There was a special show on Club Cruise, which hasn't aired yet. Actually, it was just was put together last week with Kate Wells and Anita Henry talking about the city's disgraceful response to medical marijuana, and we're going to talk about that, or actually we're going to play that.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these, like Steve Argy was talking about, a lot of the people that are running for city council members right now, and you also mentioned that it's kind of like progressive? Come on, man. As conservative as they can be, I mean, the only things they vote on is, oh, let's make the Santa Cruz city color green. Big deal. It doesn't cost a dime. Sure, let's do it. And that's the kind of shit they pass right away. Anything that helps anybody out, and it's like, we don't have the constituents.
I gotcha.
You know, that's...
A lot of people get the idea that because you can buy it over the counter and there aren't these strong regulations against using these materials, which are poisons. I mean, pesticides, they wouldn't work killing bugs and different things if they weren't poisons, and they're poisons to people too, and they're poisons to the environment. A lot needs to be done, and you know, we've started with this moratorium with the schools. But we need to move a lot further with it, you know, really put the message out strongly that these materials shouldn't be used, or there should be a very good reason to use them when they are used. There should be a permit process to use any sort of pesticide in the city of Santa Cruz, and a review process, you know, through that, we then the people in the city will have a say in what's being used around us. I mean, it's like other people have the right now to poison us with chemicals that, you know, we haven't had any say in. You know, they buy it over the counter, they spray it around, and a lot of times we don't even know. Caltrans is using pesticides in the city of Santa Cruz, even though the city has stated it doesn't want these materials used, and we really need to confront them on that issue as well. You know, but you know, it's a very important issue, very much tied to this whole organic movement that's going on, and you know, we need organic cities. We don't need all these chemicals around us.
Peter?
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty unhappy with the level of different things that get dumped in our city and also in our agricultural areas around us. I surf, and whenever I go to 3 Mile after they spray out there, it smells funky in the water, and I wonder what that does to me. I manage 12 houses, and I don't I don't use pesticides or anything like that on any of them. I think, you know, you can do this stuff manually. I live actually next door to Terra Nova Ken, and, you know, they show that it can be done in a much less destructive manner than just dumping pesticides out there. So I think we should really look at getting rid of that, the use of those, at least in public lands entirely. And I don't know how you can work on it in the private sector so much, but, you know, at least for the city to sort of lead and say that they don't do that. If I get elected, another thing is related. I'd really like to see Santa Cruz ban the use of MTBE in local gasoline. The city of Tahoe took that up and banned it. It's something that's probably equally as bad, if not worse, than a lot of the pesticides, because you have no choice. You're breathing it every day. It's 10% of gasoline, and it's known to be cancer-causing. They even put it on your gas tank. When you go fill up your car next time, look, it says right there, you're pumping cancerous-causing stuff into your car and you're going to spew it out. You really have no choice in the matter, unfortunately. And it's something that may get phased out at some point by the state, depending on how the oil interests manage to maneuver. I think the city of Santa Cruz should, you know, second the motion of Tahoe and say, you know what, we're not going to take this crap either. It usually blows inland, probably for us, so it really doesn't matter too much for us, but at least we can make a statement that, you know, we're not going to stand for state and national governments foisting different things on us that are unhealthy for us. So I'd like to see those done with, too.
All right. Well, we're way over time here. I just want to quickly ask all three of you if you have any points you want to end on. And Peter, why don't you just go ahead and start since you've got the mic there.
Hey, yeah, this has been really fun campaigning, and it's great meeting a lot of different people that I see every day but just haven't stopped to say hi to. And it's been really fun getting support from a lot of people. It's been very encouraging. I think it's been a little bit disillusioning to see sort of the inner workings of politics. I've been surprised by how organized different organizations are, really, you know, pushing their people and not having an open mind towards other people, particularly younger people, but just in general. So that's been a little disillusioning, but it is a really fun process for me, and I really can't wait to see how well I do Tuesday. I'm hoping I can do well, and I'm off to go canvas some more, but yeah, it's been great, and I've really enjoyed running with the other 14 people. They've all been you know, very friendly, and whether we agree or disagree on stuff, you know, it's been great getting to know those people, and sort of I felt like I was running with them as opposed to against them a lot of the time, which has been nice. And you know, whether I agree with people or not on things, it's been a good experience, and I probably will be back running at some point. You know, this district elections might derail my chances of doing it anytime soon, but who knows, maybe I'll move to a different district. And
all right, Peter Cook, thank you. Steve, you want to go ahead and close on any points?
Yeah, there's a lot of issues that just aren't being dealt with by the city government. City government here really has to, the politicians involved really have to pretend to be progressive on issues in order to get elected and to stay in office here. And unfortunately, though, they've been very anti-poor in terms of how police treat poor people, how they treat people of color, how they treat political activists fighting for the rights of homeless people. You know, there's much that needs to be done, and in terms of a lot of these issues, it's, to me, it's an ugly, there's a lot of ugliness involved. I see a lot of ugliness in people, you know, people justifying things like keeping sleep illegal for people at night, and pretending to be progressive on issues. So I think it's very important for people to look beyond a lot of the progressive sounding talk that you may hear from the Scott Kennedys of the world that get all kinds of money from all kinds of big money from corporations and so forth, and really look at what candidates are doing on the local level, what they're saying on the local level, and vote that way. And think about things in those terms, and take on this local system, which is not progressive, though it pretends to be, and vote for people who are really going to change things. Vote with your heart, and I think it's important that people get out and vote. There's very important things on the ballot. Proposition 36 will get rid of get rid of jail time for personal possession and drug use. We've got candidates like Medea Benjamin, Craig Coffin, Ralph Nader running on the Green Party, taking on the system, taking on a lot of the problems that we're dealing with, and Steve Argue here running locally. So vote for me.
All right. Thank you, Steve Argue. And Bonnie Moore, do you want to go ahead and close on any items there?
Yeah, it's called Vote Your Conscience. And right on, Steve. That, you know, and I just want to reiterate basically the same thing that I said before. This has been a definite learning experience. I really honor and treasure a lot of the people that I've met and what they've brought to this campaign and this candidacy here. And I wish everybody lots of luck. May the best people get in, and we'll just keep moving. If we don't get in, maybe we'll make it a council of 15. we all have a whole tie vote there. Anyway, I just want to say that it's been a definite learning experience. There's been a lot of hard things and a lot of good things that have come by, and there is a lot of work that needs to be done. And please go out and vote. It's real important. Your vote will count. It'll make a difference here for the city of Santa Cruz towards the future. And so we need everybody to participate. Stand up, get involved, come to city council meetings, get your views out there, and definitely sign up on commissions and task force, because we need to have task forces and commissions that reflect what they're designed for. And so I want to encourage everybody to step up and do what Steve's done, I've done, and come on down and run for a candidacy 2 years from now. Bye.
All right, that was Bonnie Moore. I want to thank all three of the candidates who joined me this morning, Steve Argue, Peter Cook, and Bonnie Moore. Real quick here, we have a phone call coming in. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, thank you very much for having me on. This is David Silva, the Green Party. Just wanted to let everybody know out there that we are doing door hangers for Ralph Nader, and on that door hanger we have the Green Team, the City Council, four City Council candidates we've endorsed, the Green Party's endorsed here, and we're distributing those from 103 Green Street. That's the Adobe on Green Street. If you don't know where Green Street is, it's sort of kind of across from Mission Plaza where Holy Cross is, but almost to Chestnut, but not quite. It's a one block long street. Just come on in, and we'll get you a precinct packet with a map and the designated houses to do the door hanging on. This is how we get out that doubtable vote that none of the pollsters are counting, and this is how we're going to make a big difference. And thanks for doing your show today. It was really great. I had to hear it in spots in the car radio, but I really enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks, David.
Sure thing.
Bye-bye.
Found a new hobby, it doesn't cost a dime. It doesn't take prestigious and it doesn't take much time. It's right up my North Alley, way off the hick path. Democracy in action, well I call it Tuesday Grab. Subvert the institution, the fortune and the fame. Send that carpetbagger's back, beat them at their game.
And the candidates, most of them are fleeing the studio, obviously afraid of the wrath of Norse, but we'll see. It's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the November 5th, 2000 edition, Election Eve. Who do you vote for? Hey, I'll give you all the answers. Still in the studio, Steve Argue, and hey, certainly unusual party is breaking in. We'll have to see what happens here. No, it's not an FCC raid. It's could be a party happening here. We'll see. Stay with us and join the party on 96.3.
To make a television.